Good morning, Scotty.
Hello, Nicholas. Yes, that's a lot of research for me. Lucky I came in early and spent the last hour in the green room getting up to date with all that. Steve-O time's out of control out the back.
It's going to be absolutely superb. Now, Steve-O's going to just run the show as per usual, but one guest I'm really looking forward to chatting to today, and we'll do so at about 6:40 a.m, is Damon Hedder, the darts hero from yesterday. Because is darts one of those sports where everyone has a couple of sherbets down at the local, and they think, yeah, I'm pretty good at this caper, and today we get to speak to someone who actually is?
I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, what's the pathway to become the best in the world? Yeah, I mean, we've all had a crack at it, you know, in a mate's shed with a few beers or in the pub, and we all, you're right, we're men and women, everyone thinks they're pretty good at flicking it, but we're really not.
You'd have pretty good hand-eye coordination. I reckon you'd go okay.
Yeah, I've had a couple of goes at it, but it's one of those ones. It's an all-nighter, and then you won't play it for a little while again. Then you have a few more sherbets, you're back into it again.
What sports did you play?
Oh, back in the lack.
Back in your prime. Not that you're out of your prime now, of course.
Thank you. Oh, no. Well, I grew up in the country, so it was cricket, football, basketball, tennis. Like, it was the whole shebang. That's just what you did. Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. And then, yeah, during the week, you'd play basketball. Yeah, I had a bit of everything going on.
In terms of ability, how would you rank them? what were you the best at?
Oh, well, Nicholas. Where do
well,
I start?
You're competing against yourself, so there's no...
Probably football was better than cricket, probably. Yep. And I just dabbled in the rest. Basketball wasn't bad. It lacked a bit of height. But no, football was pretty good for a little while.
Position?
Slowish midfielder, ball magnet-y, and then went into slower, deep forward type person.
Did you chirp on the field?
No. I played with a lot of tougher men than me. So
yeah,
I was
chirping would not have been wise.
Well, I played back in the Hampden League when Grant Thomas was coaching and played. That's showing my age a little bit. Like, when I was very young, he was like, we played against Warrnambool. It was a great team. So, yeah, I was not chirping at any point.
That would have been the real footy with the mud up to the knees some days.
Oh, yes. No, we played, you know, Camperdown and Port Ferry. We went all around the countryside at Colac. So it was good fun.
That is good fun. That's the best thing about
sport.
Then
I saw the light and journalism just called me, Nicholas, and now look at us. Here we are.
The dollar signs lit up. Now, yesterday we had a chat off air, and don't panic.
Oh,
I'm not going to bring an off air conversation that you're not going to be comfortable with on air about your time living in Boston, Massachusetts.
Yes.
And I thought to myself on the way home, would that have been around the time the Patriots made and lost the Super Bowl?
No. We were before. There was Drew Bledsoe. There was no Tom Brady.
But he made a Super Bowl, Bledsoe, and they lost to the Giants.
Well, they weren't very good when I was there. So that's 97, 98. They might. When did Bledsoe? We need to Google this. And I had the Celtics with Rick Pitino, and they were terrible as well. Although Antoine Walker made the All-Star team, which I got to go to New York, excuse me, and cover an All-Star game. It was Jordan's last one, so that was a highlight. I sort of was in the locker room with about 800 others trying to interview him, so I can claim that.
That's very cool. How close did you get to him?
Oh, I was standing probably 5 metres away, but getting squashed, and the great man was there.
That's got to be on the podium as a career highlight.
Yeah, pretty good. I can't take that one away. But no, did Drew Bledsoe make a Super Bowl?
Yep, they made the Super Bowl played in Jan 97, so throughout the 96 season. So that was probably when you were there.
Jan 97. No, I was there. I was there the next season.
Okay,
sorry.
They lost to Green Bay in the Super Bowl, 35-21.
Well, they didn't play well the next year then. Maybe
okay.
That's where I'm coming from.
There we
apologies.
Go.
No, 97-98, I was there.
They were around the mark. So meeting MJ, seeing MJ that close would have been very cool.
I almost got in his way. He almost touched me to get around me because I was just in the wrong spot.
Did you get starstruck?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on. The whole thing blew my mind. But it's quite interesting. When I got there, because it was an exchange, so I got thrown into work. Like, it was just, off you go to the college game, go to the high school games. You just got to report, and I'd have to put on the American accent if I was rang someone. It was so bad. And a few of my mates came and stayed over the June. They're like, what are you doing? I go, I've got to pretend I'm American to have this conversation, or else I won't be able to, they just can't understand me. And they'll just laugh and wait.
Really?
Yeah. If you're making phone calls to, you know, like managers of You'd have to give it a twang of America. It was so bad.
Can you give us a rendition?
No, it's been a long time.
Come on.
No, no, I couldn't.
Give the people what they want at 6:10 on a Tuesday morning.
I'm trying to remember. No, I can't. I can't, Nicholas. It was a lifetime away.
Wonderful memories, though. It sounds like you had a lot of fun and you learnt a lot from that experience.
Yes, I did. It shaped me, Nicholas.
Oh, dear me. I'd love to have...
Got me to where I am today.
Absolutely, right, no doubt about that. So, Michael Jordan, you got starstruck. Have you been starstruck many other times?
I'm pretty good. Like, I've never got an autograph. Like, I've never covered an event and got an autograph.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. There's journos or people who think, oh, no, this is so amazing, I'm getting an autograph as well. So, I've always, there's been a part of me going, well, that's not where I sit. So, starstruck. You've met as many people as I have.
Yeah, the first...
Usain Bolt gets me a bit.
Yeah, it's funny. I've met him a few times as well, and I didn't get starstruck because he's so friendly and charismatic, if that makes sense. He was so nice and so warm, you quickly forget he's one of the greatest athletes of all time. The first time the most starstruck I've gotten was actually working with Wayne Carey, because he's still got that presence about him.
Yeah.
Took me a while just to take a few breaths. And he's a ripper bloke. He was fantastic. But that was one that I did get a little jittery with.
Yeah. No, Bolt, because I covered the athletics. And then, like you said, got to, when he came out to Australia with Johnny Steph, got to actually, like you said, be quite close and have a conversation with him. It's like, oh, this is a bit next level. So, yeah, Usain's probably at the top of the pile there.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And he's one of the all-time greats as well, but he's so good with the fans. I can understand why they pay big dollars to get him across for the Spring Carnival, because he makes time for everyone. He's charismatic. He's having fun doing it, and I think that translates, because then people meet him, they get a photo. It was almost impossible to go to Flemington for a period of time and not get a photo with one of the all-time great athletes.
And my sport suffered, you know, without him. He's just... I was fortunate to cover 10 years of him at his best. It was extraordinary.
And what I loved about him, and you would have forgotten more about athletics than I'll ever know, but he was one of those guys that was head and shoulders above the pack. There was never any jealousy, never any talk of doing anything wrong. He was just a wonderful athlete and so great for the sport.
No, unlike our AFL footballers, there was literally not one misstep from Usain Bolt. And he had, as you saw, the adulation and... He had so much going on, and he was just an amazing ambassador for the sport.
During his career, you interviewed him, and then we see him a lot post-career. So post-career, it's all fun and smiles, because good on him. During his career, did he ever seem more tense and more serious than we got the impression of, or was he pretty cool, calm and collected all the time?
I mean, he had that Jamaican laid-back, but he was very... friendly from the whole way. Like, that was just his nature. But he'd say things like, you know, I'm going to be the best, or this. And he was very confident, and rightly so, because he proved to be it. But he had this confidence about him. But no, it was always joking around, happy. You know, even when he, like, there was a world champs where he broke, and they just brought in the rule where one break, you're out. And, like, it was the whole championship was just ruined by one misstep from the greatest sprint of all time. But he just, oh, yeah, that's all right. I'll learn from it. And it was just upbeat Usain Boltish. No brooding. Like, all these American guys, you know, think they're too cool for school. He literally was too cool for school, but he was so good to everyone.
Yes, good morning to Brent Zarafa, my close friend, who we may have had Usain in about 19 multis to win that at about $1.60. He was $1.01.
It was amazing. Yeah. Imagine covering. You're looking down there and you go, did that just really happen? And then he walks off the... Away you go.
Forgot about that. My therapy session's just finished.
Like, when Sally Pearson was going for Olympic gold, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
Just for false starts. Not that if she win or... the false start thing just does my head. I don't know how they do it sometimes.
It's unbelievable.
How it doesn't get in your head. It does. There's a few people. Clearly, we still have a lot of breaks. But now it's the one break, you're out. Oh, I'd freak.
What do you think the rule should be?
One. I reckon you're going to have one.
So just one per person?
No, one for the whole field.
Okay. And then from there, it's sudden death.
Which they found there was a bit of tactics, like some, you know, the plotter in lane 8 had break, and so it'd stuff it up a bit. But the one out, you're out. Oh, That's so brutal.
It is brutal. And speaking of brutal, it's been a brutal decade for Essendon supporters. We've got Andy from Traralgon giving us a buzz now. He wants to talk about the Bombers. Andy, thanks for giving us a buzz. What are your thoughts on the last start winners?
It was a real good win, boys. And it's a win, it's a win. And hopefully keep on going for the rest of the year, half and 40.
Oh, they'll be up and about. They love their Bombers. Did you see that one coming, Andy, against the Saints?
Funny, boys. I had to work on last Saturday morning and I was falling asleep. I didn't know the results the next day. Oh. And it was a real good win anyway.
You love your Bombers. Slept through it. That was very impressive. Under all the pressure you've been on, because you've had an ordinary start to the year, they certainly brought it, whereas the other mob didn't. Big time.
Yes.
Who's your favourite player, Andy?
My favourite player, and this, I see I'm from Traralgon, born and free, and just playing myself. I look up to my mates like Brendan Goddard, Jason Winterlick, and all their players. And today, someone from St Kilda is Tim Membry.
Fair enough. Tim Membry, number 28, does wonderful things up forward for the Saints. Thanks very much for that, Andy. Good luck for the Bombers for the rest of the season. Good to see the Bombers supporters up and about.
And sleeping through key wins.
Would that show a lack of faith in the team there, Scotty?
You would have slept. We've slept through some things that we've tried to stay up for.
As long as it's not work, that's the main thing. But just back to Usain Bolt. He'd be one of the most popular athletes of all time, as well as the most successful.
Yeah, without a doubt. To balance what he did, no scandal, carry a sport, be so dominant, so engaging. Because that was half the, like you said, I mean, you pay to get him out to the races because he wouldn't sit in the corner and brood, and like we've seen so many other celebrities. He was literally enjoyed a party and liked being the man. I still wish he, not a comeback. He went out at the right time.
Yeah.
He went out on top, but you miss him. We miss the great man.
Is there one or two athletes between that 16 to 22 mark, age-wise, that you're looking forward to really stepping up in the next few years? Are there a few we can black book that you think? Or is that too hard a question to ask? Like, if I had said that to you when Usain Bolt was in that bracket, would you have been able to identify him?
Oh, he ran very fast over 200 when he was like 18 or 19 and wow, but then was injured and then started what he did. No, I mean, we were, you know, the Olympics at Tokyo and an Italian guy I'd never heard of won.
Mm.
And we instantly all went, oh no, drug cheat. But to be fair, he's since won the world indoors and actually our man Rowan Browning's over there training with him. This is Marcel, the Italian. So there's no obvious. We always look to America in the sprinting, but they've had their drug problems, so that's always an asterisk. When you the next big American person, like Christian Coleman, came through, drug test failed, had to ban. So that's the worry. I could see why Usain was clean. That's the problem with cover athletics. Everyone looks at it and thinks they're all on the gear.
Right? Yep.
Sadly, most of them had been over the journey. So I couldn't tell you, anoint you the next big thing.
How could you tell Usain was clean?
Well, when you looked at, he did as many steps, but covered bigger ground. So his rotation of steps were the same as the guy next to him, but his stride pattern was so long, which you could sell. So then you think about, if he's turning over his legs as quick as you next year, he's covering the distance, more distance. So it just made sense why he was so amazing and better than everyone else, because he's so tall. It's such an intimidating factor. So I got physiologically, or whatever that term is, I got why I thought he was superior, whereas all the other guys are just brute muscles, small legs, just turn them over really quick. He was turning his legs over as quick, but just covering the distance.
And the fact that his physique wasn't dissimilar to someone you'd see down the gym. It wasn't like he had muscles on muscles. No. He was tall and skinny and lean. So it didn't just stick out that he was a superpower.
No.
That helped the clean image, which he was, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Thank goodness.
Well, near the end, we're like, if he ever get test positive, we
shut the sport down. Oh,
I mean, we hang in by a thread sometimes with some people who, you know, they're all on the gear and we have to have that argument. But if he'd gone down, yeah, I think I'd struggle to support the old ass.
Yeah, it'd be what cycling went through and maybe
worse.
Well,
exactly. I mean, to be fair, I look at the Tour de France now and go, you know what, I don't know how physically you can actually do what these blokes do. And then, sadly, we've all watched the docos. We all, for a long time, physically, they couldn't actually do what they were doing without help.
Nah, very dark chapter there for sport, and one that'll probably take even years to come before we fully recover from that. The texts are coming through thick and fast. There's been some good questions, and we did get this one come through yesterday as well regarding Liam Jones. We'll speak to Steve-O about that as well, because yesterday we spoke about what Carlton is missing. It is a key defender, and obviously there was that Liam Jones incident in the off-season, or decision from Liam Jones, and as a result, he's not there playing for the Navy Blues and could be a big loss later on in the season. We've had another message come through, and I love this one, simply 180, which we'll be talking about when we do the darts a little bit later on. It's always good fun when you hear the caller with the darts. And we've had one just come through. G'day, guys. Usain Bolt, a once-in-a-lifetime athlete. What a freak. Keep up the great work. There we go. A positive text. We appreciate that. That person hasn't put their name. They're welcome anytime in studio to join us for breakfast.
No, Daniel's never had one of them, so this is good. We're breaking new ground.
Just keeping the same rhythm. That's what he's doing. I like this. That is the dart. Damon Hatter beats Johnny Clayton. And that is the dart that captures the World Cup of Darts for Australia.
How good was that? The Aussies getting the job done in the World Cup. And we're joined by one of the superstars that made that happen in Damon Hatter. Damon, thank you for having a chat to us today. How were the celebrations?
Magic, mate, magic. Glad to be on here. But, I tried to play it cool at the end, but just let all the emotion out, eh?
We can feel that atmosphere through even that little grab. What was it like in Frankfurt, going bananas?
Oh, man, the haze of noise on my back, like going for the winning double is just, you can't pay for that.
Now, you got the job done alongside the Wizard Simon Whitlock. He had some glowing things to say about you after the tournament as well. He described you as the best player on the planet right now and a great friend. It must have been very special, not just to win, but to win alongside a legend like him who'd come close but without any success right when it mattered in the past.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. To get our first World Cup win, and especially for Simon, he's been here as Australia's ambassador for, since darts I could remember. And for someone like myself, just to come through and give him like a helping hand, you could say, a boost, and, take Australian darts to the next level. Hopefully that inspires more boys and more people to get on board.
Damon, can you explain the format for those who don't know? It all happens mostly in the one day. And how many matches, and then what's the format in the final? Singles, and double? How does it work?
Yeah, so it was a three-day tournament. We played on a Friday one game, and we played on a Saturday one game, and then on the Sunday it was all the finals, so quarterfinals, semifinals, and the main final. You'll play two singles, and then if it's one all, then you'll play a doubles to decide who goes through. And then once you get to the final, the format just extends a little bit. You play the two singles, and then you play the doubles, and then you'll play reverse singles if needed.
And that in the final, sorry, we won 3-1. So who was the reverse singles? Was you to claim the win?
Yeah, so I played Johnny Clayton. Obviously, he's just been playing phenomenal for the last 2 years as well, been killing it. He won this, they knocked us out twice at the World Cup. The last two previous years. So, it was just absolute great revenge at the right time, I think.
Absolutely superb. Now, Damon, you're a roofer by trade. How on earth did you have your journey start from Perth, working a trade, to over now living in Leicester as a professional darts player?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was 2 years of, about 18 months of planning to do it. Just to set myself up financial. I had to get my wife on board, that was probably the biggest one.
How did you sell that?
I took her in the back room with the other dart players and stuff, and pretty much they convinced her into it, saying, oh, you can you travel the world, you can go shopping here and doing that, and so that was pretty much it.
Did your journey start in a pub, just chucking it at the board, or how did it even get to that point?
Yeah, so that was it. My parents always played, and I was always a sports person. I was playing all different types of sports, and I just filled in one night after just chucking it home, and they asked me to fill in. Yeah, just the pub. I think at them days you had to be over a certain age to go into a pub, I think. and I just, I went from there and built on. I just had sort of a natural talent, and it was only a few years ago where I took it serious and didn't want to leave any stones unturned and just give it a full crack,
Financially, what does it mean to get that big win? Because it was £70,000 to the winner, £35,000 each, so about 62,000 Aussie each, which is fantastic. But then the tax man take their bit, and that's obviously got to set you up from a business perspective for what, 6 months, 12 months? How does it have ramifications financially?
Yeah, so I've got like a business account over here now, I've still got a mortgage back home, so, I'll probably still lose a bit of money when I transfer it back to Australia and all that. But, I'm still paying a mortgage off back home, and I'm still always keen and eager. And you're not really thinking about the money. It's more or less winning world titles and winning singles and winning, and the money, obviously, it just comes part and parcel. So if you're winning, then everything's going great.
Damon, there'll be plenty of listeners going, oh, I'm pretty good at darts, I win down at the local. I mean, what do you need to be able to progress your darts? I mean, what's the hand-eye obviously has to be part of it, but how do you actually go to the next level?
Yeah, it's a lot of time on the board. It's the old saying, what you put in is what you get out. And I put in, a heck load of time. I at least did, back home, at least an hour to 2 hours a day, and plus comps and stuff as well. But then to take it to the next level as a professional, I've practiced in 3, 6, 8 hours a day. So I'm just treating it like a normal job.
And the mental strength, like we heard the audio, I mean, you're in front of thousands of people and you've got to throw the dart in a specific little, millimetre hole. I mean, how do you teach yourself that side of it?
Oh, I think that just comes along with experience. Every time you keep going up there, you're learning all the time. With the darts that the World Series that come over to Australia and stuff, that probably helped me as well, boosted along. I got that stage experience where all the main dudes are on there all the time. So, that's all it is experience that gets you over the line, I think.
Damon, you mentioned the training. Aside from actually throwing, is there any other things you do to train? Like, are there any other techniques or things that you put yourself through to try and improve?
Well, I got a regime going just like on the practice board and stuff, and I've got like the full setup of like a pro tour, so it's all the same bizzo. But no, I like to go play golf and stuff like that. So yeah, nothing too different, but except just throwing darts.
Do you throw better having a pint or not?
Let's just put it this way. It definitely kills nerves, the pint.
And speaking of the pints, the atmosphere at the darts is simply sensational. At the top of the show, Scotty said we could hear the atmosphere coming through, and it sounded like the Aussies had the lion's share of the support in the crowd as well. That must have been something that gave you an extra little boost. And how good is it playing in front of those rowdy fans?
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it. Like, they were all, like, cheering for Simon, because Simon is well-loved over in Europe, and he's made, he's got the character, and he's just like the Australian dart idol, you could say. And, that's all you think of with Australian darts, Simon. And in Europe, they just love him bits, and it was just chanting his name and Australia and my name. And, it was a massive party just behind you. It's like, sometimes you'd rather be out there and having a bit of fun.
Yeah, our producer, this shows his expertise. How many nine darters have you had during your career, Darren?
Well, I've only hit the one in a game.
So
not too many, And it was only recently, only like a couple of months ago. I've had a crack load of them. I can't even count how many times I've missed the double to hit it. So to get it the once and over that hurdle. Hopefully there's going to be a few more rolling on this year.
Now, you're based in Leicester at the moment, which is renowned for just being a massive darts area. What's it like living in that part of the world, and have you become a Leicester fan on the football pitch?
Why is it always about the football?
It's a good link.
I've got like a fantasy team going on over here and stuff. So I only ever got into football or the soccer when I came here. I wasn't really into it, but that's all everyone talks about. So to have conversations with people, I had to get involved.
And speaking of football, you're a Fremantle Dockers supporter. They're going along nicely as well. We might have to get you back to flip the coin on grand final day if the Dockers are there.
Oh, that would be massive. Absolutely massive. Book me in.
Now, you've got a lot of fans off this chat today, and more importantly, your big win yesterday. For those of us that want to follow you going forward, where can we see you over the next couple of weeks or even months?
Well, we got the Euro Tour and then a normal Pro Tour, and then the next major one coming up is mid-July, and I'll be in Blackpool for the PDC match play, which is, worth a really big penny, and, I'm looking forward to it and hopefully some really good results.
Damon, we just got a message come through saying, this guy is an absolute champion, what a humble superstar, and I think everyone in Australia thinks the same. Well done on yesterday, and thank you so much for having a chat today.
Magic, mate. Just proud to represent.
How good is that? Damon Hedder, World Cup champion, and he was up and about too, which is what we love to see.
Oh, you don't appreciate how big it is over there. I mean, you see it on TV. And down at Marvel Stadium, and they were chucking chairs. It was anarchy, and it was so big. It's very funny to watch on the TV. But imagine the pressure.
I know. You think about making a putt, it's probably that times 10.
It's like, I know you've done it a million times, like you said, but you're just aiming, and you have to hit that little number. It's extraordinary.
And we speak about the mental toughness of it. They must need to be able to throw a dart, and as soon as it leaves their hand, they've forgotten about that, and they focus on what they're about to do.
But good on him, like you said. I had to convince the wife, and then off you go. And now he's one of the best in the world. Great story.
The financial aspect fascinates me as well because, I mean, it's fantastic. They've won £70,000 between them. But if they're travelling the world,
They'd have to be sponsors.
They would be.
You'd be surprised how much they probably earn. You probably didn't want to ask him, but he'd be earning a fair quid in that world over there. World tours around Europe. Darts, like the wizard, Simon Whitlock, he's a hero.
Yes, yes.
No, but Damon, he's our man.
World Cup of Darts, and we got to speak to him. So, Steve-O, he's done well there, Steve-O.
Oh, he's lifted.
He's done well.
He loves it. He loves it.
Welcome aboard The Breakfast Club.
Welcome back to RSN 927. Happy Tuesday. We're loving your involvement in the show. Send us a text on 0416 90 50 52. And when we think AFL breaking news, we think one man in this country, our very own Mark Stevens. And Steve-O, it's been another big 24 hours in footy.
Well, it has been. You're sounding like Eddie Maguire there. It's been a big week in footy, actually. But following up from Damon Hedder, that's a big, big ask, to be honest. I'm still in awe talking to him off air as well. So just a great story.
And not many athletes can have a pot of beer and go out and perform on the world stage, and he can.
It's normally a pint, isn't it?
Pint. It's
really
come on.
Yeah, he looks like he downs a few as well, but what an amazing story.
He's a star. Now, Steve, I fell asleep due to my early rise here for this wonderful gig. Yeah,
we're starting with, obviously, Jordan DeGoey.
Well, that's what I'm trying. I woke up and Collingwood. They've gone into more trouble.
Yeah, there is. I'll start with DeGoey, though, first, Scott. You've got to stay on the script.
Where's that say?
So the main story, I think, still is Jordan DeGoey, because it's still a state of flux. It's a delicate situation. He didn't turn up at the club yesterday, of course. Just to retrack, it's all about what happened in Bali, lewd gestures and grabbing of a girl's top, if you like. And it was interesting yesterday, the media down there. Now, let's just take a listen, first of all, at Paul Dowsley from Channel 7. He's a real little bulldog.
Former Herald Sun.
former Herald Sun again, like all three of us, actually. Dowsley was down there.
You've retired, Scotty.
It's not a bad way to be, let's be honest.
This is Jeremy Howe, just under siege down there, talking about De Goey.
He's, like, not great, so it's obviously a fair bit going on.
Wasn't he training with you?
Ask him.
You don't know?
No.
What did you think when you saw the video?
Oh, obviously, like, as a club, we'll just deal with it when Geordie comes in, so I haven't really got too much more to say about it. So,
do you think he deserves punishment?
Again, we'll just deal with it when he actually comes in.
Oh, a million questions.
Yeah, he's good at it, Dowsley. So what happens at 7 is we would send down the general news reporter.
Well, yeah, where's
the
Tom
terrier,
Tom?
And like
little,
Tom
and Mitchie Cleary?
We need to maintain a relationship with players.
Ooh.
So the plan is that you'd normally send down more of a...
aggregator.
You know, one-off. A guy that can come in and out and just do a bit of a hit job, if you like, and get the job done. So he did a good job there, Dowsley, obviously.
Did you see the footage though? Taylor Adams wasn't happy.
No.
He was in his space. It was very funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of my space.
Yeah.
And little Dowsley's like...
He did a good job. He got George Pell, Dowsley, remember at the... he followed him up the highway and he stopped in Yass or somewhere for petrol. Dowsley jumped out of the car. Remember that?
Hit on air by a protester. COVID protester.
Yeah, he was buying an egg and lettuce sandwich, George Pell, in the Shell servo. And next minute, out comes Dowsley.
Would Collingwood be annoyed with Channel 7?
No. Collingwood are fantastic with this. They're used to it. They knew it was going to happen, and it had to happen. I mean, somebody had to talk, and full credit to Jeremy Howe as well.
Point that we need to discuss. This happened on Friday. How no one of any authority has fronted up is a disgrace. You don't have to tell us.
But they're still working through it, Scott.
Doesn't matter. You've got to front and say, we're not happy. Tell the fans, you know, they like to use that term. Tell the fans, we are talking to him. Someone or authority had to front up at least by yesterday.
Yeah, I would have thought Graham Wright yesterday.
Oh, just CEO, president, hello.
That then takes the heat off the players as they leave. So
correct.
Graham Wright does it. That takes the heat off Jeremy Howe. So you've got three or four lines. Thanks, guys. We're working through it. Clearly, it's a complicated one, though, Quinny, because it's a hard one to come up with a penalty for. I mean, the actions weren't great. It was irresponsible, but there's no sign of drugs. There was no fight. So we're looking at some of the penalties. I mean, Bailey Smith, 2 weeks. Stephen May gets one for having a beer when he was rehabbing. And Jake Melksham gets off for whacking
a bloke
out on the street. So at this time, there's all these different penalties. Collingwood are trying to come up with something. Obviously, De Goey thinks there's no issue. His manager's talking as well. So it'll be interesting to see what it is. I think it'll be some sort of reprimand.
Well, I think they, in this case, though, you can isolate it from the actually what he has done or hasn't done in the case of the history he's got. So you take it away from those other ones because of, you know, New York locked up, last chance. That's why I think you can go hard on him specifically and not do it because of the incident, just do it for, you know, like Fev, people were talking about Fev. You know, Fev was a build-up of these things and Carlton went, you know what, we're done.
Maybe there should be carryover points.
Will he play Sunday against GWS?
I don't think he will, actually. Missing the first training session.
I think he will.
I think he will.
Distraction.
I think they'll sort it out. I think it'll be a fine and maybe a suspended fine. And the side story to this, and it's actually probably, you know, a really big story, is the contract's now off the table, Quinny. So 2 years at about 800, then a 2-year trigger. That's been removed. So that's penalty enough at the moment. And in the background, we've got St Kilda, who I believe had a 5-year deal on the table. You know, perhaps north of 900 a year. So if you're Jordan De Goey, you've got a decision to make. He's probably feeling a bit let down by Collingwood in some ways. Would he wouldn't be happy with the hierarchy of Collingwood right now.
Potentially not, but I think the suggestion yesterday was it might have sunk in. Over the weekend, he was like, blasé, I've done nothing wrong, we're all good, nothing to see. But I think it might have sunk in the last 24 hours that, oh, hang on, I've let them down. So he might be a bit more... You know, putting his hand up, which he wasn't doing a few days earlier.
If you're a St Kilda fan out there, maybe just text in yes or no, Jordan De Goey at 5 years. I know Grant Thomas has come out strongly and said, just get it done.
Yeah, I'd do it. Absolutely. Yeah. Back yourself in. And if he doesn't change, well, he doesn't change. You'll win you some games. But, yeah, I'd do it.
Can you think of a player? The one that jumps to mind is Stevie Johnson. He was sort of at the crossroads a little bit, then Geelong got him going and he had a magnificent career, won 3 premierships. So it can happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a good good analogy.
Yeah, he was more just a naughty boy jumping off fences and whatever, a few drinks. There was nothing as lewd as this or trouble with crime, I wouldn't have thought, Scotty.
No, Stephen was just misdemeanours.
Yep. Misdemeanours. But so just when you thought Collingwood were travelling beautifully, they got a new coach, a happy guy in Craig McRae, and everything's rosy at Collingwood. There's another issue, of course, a TikTok video. Ginnivan and Quaynor rating women out of 10 and their features, talking about people's teeth, etc. It's pretty bad taste. They're both in a bedroom together. You can hear laughter in the background. Just a really immature type of thing, Scotty, for a couple of young footballers. I mean, it's sort of 12-year-old type of action. What would Collingwood be thinking about and do about this one? Again, it's borderline actionable. I think it's just a reprimand and a wrap over the knuckles. But
it's a wrap over the knuckles, but it is another layer of the women issues that DeGoey has had, and you know, this sense that Collingwood is a club, you know, they've had to do better, that they've got cultural issues. I mean, that's how they've struggled to keep that under control, and now this, and it's like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I don't know the youth of today. My son's, what is he, turning 20. I don't understand TikTok. I don't understand why you'd have that conversation on a tape. What is it, a live show to people who follow you? I mean, that's just nonsensical to me. And I could imagine that's what the officials at Collingwood are going, do we have to say don't use your phones or something? I mean, boys,
they are educated, Scotty, these guys, aren't they? With the AFLPA, social media, they got all the experts in. There's no excuses.
How tone deaf are these players? It's just that, I mean, it's not worse than DeGoey, but I was just shocked when I saw that.
It was probably stupider than DeGoey, though, like, because it's just such an unforced error.
But it's a demeaning thing too. You know, rating women out of 10 in any era, but in this day, it is just ridiculously poor behaviour.
Take the moral judgment, like take us judging them out morally though. Just logistically, what would the upside be in posting it to social media?
There can't be anything.
Maybe relax. You maybe had a couple of beers, which is fair enough. But yeah, there's no upside.
So this hurt, to be honest, like Jack Ginnivan, right? He's a rascal who we've all fallen in love with. This takes a shine off him. Because a lot of people are like, oh, no, we'll give him, cut him some slack. You know, he's good for footy. Then it's like, mate, you're an idiot. Yeah, you know, you're a bit of a smarty. That's silly. And Collingwood, that's what they're dealing with. They're hopefully going to front
think
up today.
I think idiot's a bit harsh. Like, they're young and silly, and I think they should realise it was the wrong thing to do. Hopefully the club can teach them and they don't do something going forward. It's not a sackable offence.
I know everything these
players do gets widely criticised and very harshly judged. Yeah. Like, I don't think any of us think it was a smart thing to do, but there's a lot worse things that players have said or people have said and done.
It's a media manager's nightmare this week for Collingwood. I think she started yet, Scotty, or not?
Yesterday.
Started yesterday. So.
Oh, really?
She's been at Harvard, which is fair enough, doing a course over there. It was an AFL scholarship type of thing. So Nadine Rubber, who's left the AFL, that's just stepping into the fire.
Oh, my goodness. How was work today? Yeah, a couple of challenges. What else have you got for us?
I thought it was hard at the Liberal Party, mate.
Well, you had to leave.
Collingwood's next level.
Any other footy news maybe on the field?
There is plenty around. Now, Braden Pruce, this is an interesting one with the MRP, that tackle on English, which that was a lot of venom in that, the sling, English hit the ground. Now, it was judged medium impact 1 week, which I thought was light on because that was really, you know, when you look at it, as an example, that's exactly not what you want to do. Now there's delayed concussion, which wasn't factored in. So English is out for at least 12 days. He has a history of it, two or three other concussions in the past. He could be out for 3 to 4 weeks with this. Scotty, I've got to ask, can you revisit this? Because clearly Chriso hasn't ticked the boxes. He wasn't aware of the severeness of this at the time. Can the case be reopened, given that he's now got delayed concussion? Because clearly it should be, I think it's higher than medium impact.
Well, it would have been at the time, but like he didn't know.
Well, they can challenge versions. Mm. I mean, usually they channel tribunal outcomes.
I just think
the NRP is their own. Yeah, that's not a bad point.
He won't be challenging, put it that way.
No, he'll accept it. Yeah, it's a good point.
But it was a really bad action, I think, at the time when we're supposed to be looking at the action rather than the results, Scotty, with these tackles. Yes. Remember they said that at the start of the year? That should have been 2 weeks. I know that he played on, which was surprising.
I'm more worried about our man.
Well, he's had three concussions in 3 years, yeah. And he was up and about. Like, he seriously...
Dominant.
People talk about Bailey Smith, the exciting players at the Bulldog. He is... He and Aaron Norton are the two. Now, he is a freak show in the ruck, ready to go. So that's a huge blow. Hopefully, he can only miss a week or two. And
he's so courageous, too. The way he goes back with the flight of the ball into those packs, he took some massive marks. Yeah. And such a shame he's hurt again.
Cody Waitman looks like he's avoided surgery, strapped up. They've got him as a test. I believe he's unlikely to play. So he may miss against the Hawks. So it's a bit of a danger game now, Scotty. Obviously, Lewis and Gunston are back for Hawthorn just in time, down forward. And they've been pretty good, Hawthorn.
Well, as we've seen with Sam Mitchell, I mean, they're a young team sort of figuring it out. But when they're on... Hang on.
You two yesterday were talking flag dogs. It was all about Bulldogs, unstoppable.
I
and now you're playing Hawthorn are a bottom five team.
No, Hawthorn, I've said they're the best 4-9 team that I have ever seen. They've put in a great season for 4-9.
Before you interjected, I was about to say when they're on, which they have been, and we've seen that two or three times, they beat Brisbane down. They are capable, Nicholas. Mm. So if they come to play, for want of that cliche, that's an issue for the Dogs.
If the Bulldogs don't win Friday night, they are not premiership contenders.
No, I agree with that. But English, Waitman, who else? Duray,
yeah,
all out.
Got a few out. Bailey Smith.
Bailey Smith. Yeah.
Smith and English are in the top four players at the club. So that's two of your top four out. So you know, it's a
danger zone.
Speaking of danger, he's back for Geelong. Dusty's back at Richmond. That's going to be a blockbuster. That one, that's a hard one to pick. Cochin, it's a fractured clavicle.
And that tackle, the missed tackle.
Yeah, so
kept playing on. Courageous.
Probably miss a week or two with that. They'll put a pin in that. And we spoke about the mandate. We've had texts about Liam Jones. Nothing will change this year with that vaccination.
Will he be back at Carlton next season?
I think he'll be back in AFL footy, whether it's at Carlton, I'm not sure, because... Vossie sort of said they're pretty quick to move on, Scotty, didn't he, with Liam Jones? I think he's got some currency if he stayed fit.
If he comes back and does a proper pre-season,
To be honest, he's perfect to go back to the Bulldogs in the back line as a key back.
Wowee. I like this.
Yeah, I think he'd be perfect at either of his two former clubs, the Bulldogs or the Blues.
Is it? Obviously, they had to bring that mandate in at the time. And things have changed. Society's changed. But it's just we're in a season, Quinny, and there's no more drafts. There's no more mechanisms to get there. So I feel a little bit sorry, to be honest, for Liam Jones. He did that on his own.
He's been a bit unlucky with it, the way it's played out.
Very unlucky.
No, I hope he comes back. I hope he comes back. Has another crack.
He's a good character.
Well, we'll see what happens down at Collingwood.
Anything else to leave us with?
No, there'll just be more media down there today. And I just stick by that Jeff Walsh one down to North. It hasn't got a lot of traction yet, but stay tuned there. North need to do something. He's the ideal man. And I wonder who'll Channel 7 will be sending down today after Quaynor and Ginnivan.
Oh, no. Tom and Mitchell appear now.
No, I think Dowsley might have another crack.
Anything for the sounding board, boys? You two get regular mentions in that.
Oh, I think Mark Robinson might feature in today's version.
I avoid the sounding board.
No, it's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
I love it. No, it's very impressive. Now, I've had some correspondence about our Jane Bunn.
Ah, yes.
He's a bit nervous. Yes. He's got it wrong. Sun not further away, just lowest angle in the sky.
Okay.
Ooh, Jane, what do we think? He's contemplating that.
That's all right. He's still...
The sun stays at the same distance regardless?
I don't know.
Hang on. Jane's back.
I think I was in the right postcode. It's semantics.
Yeah.
No, but I'm happy to... Your mailman probably spot on the money there.
So you're saying that the sun moves further distance away as the seasons go on?
Splitting hairs.
No. I'm not an expert. I just know...
It was a great information. Thank you. We appreciate that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Scott.
Now, we're going to take a short break. Thank you very much to you, Steve-O, as per usual. Entertaining and informative.
Good on you, Quinny. I think this guy's got a dark personality.
No comment.
Ching, ching. Well done.
Victoria's Own Breakfast Club.
Welcome back to RSN. We're now joined by Kevin Sheen, a man that would have forgotten more about star footballers than most of us will ever know. If he had this skill set with horse racing, he'd be worth billions. We won't remind him of that now. But Kevin, thanks so much for having a chat ahead of what's probably one of the most exciting times of the year for you.
Yeah, Scotty, Nick, great to be with you. It is an exciting time, and we reflect for a sec. 3 years since we've had national championships, so it's been a long time for the Scouts, and we've had some rep games, but nothing like the full-blown, you know, best against the best over, you know, four matches where you play the Vicks play SA, WA, the Allies, etc. So it's a great time for the young players, and great for the Scouts, and it gives us a bit of a glimpse of the future, and we love having a look at who the stars of tomorrow are going to be.
So, Shifter, where is it all happening over the next couple of weeks? In mainly Melbourne, or how have you got it happening this year?
Yeah, so we're up to Sydney on Saturday. We'll see Vic Metro up there to play the Allies, the combined Division 2 side in the old language. And then on the Sunday, Vic Country will travel across to South Australia. Look, because of the COVID sort of situation, it's fly in, fly out. So not week-long stuff, but the games are spread out, and it allows, the Scouts move around a lot, but the boys get in and get out. And we're just one game away, so 10 in total with each of the teams playing their four matches. So that's pretty exciting for everyone involved. We've had a glimpse last weekend. SA had a 37-point win over the Allies over in Adelaide, and we saw 40-odd boys all with plenty of hope and expectation that performed pretty well. It was a great standard game, and I think the Scouts went away pretty happy that there's a few stars of tomorrow that they've seen there today.
I mean, we always think, what's this draft crop like? I mean, the word is it's not as good as some years, but is that the COVID impact still? You know, a lot of these kids didn't play footy for a couple of years, Kev. I mean,
it's going to be a factor. Yeah. We weigh it up. There's no doubt that missed stages of development, critical stages. For many of the boys, the Victorian boys, didn't play in 2020. That would have been the normal year. 200 of them would have played in our under-16 nationals and been on that stage comparing their ability against the best boys from around the nation and learning from that, growing confidence from that, and then building up into their 17th year the following year. So all those things have been taken away. You've had some intra-state games. You know, you've had your club comps that happen for most states for half a year at least, but you've taken away a big chunk of the normal preparation. Now, what that means is we're going to see some surprises, which is brilliant. Now, boys will bob up that we hadn't really heard of until the trial game started a few weeks back, and that's going to be brilliant. And, look, who knows? I think these boys will progress pretty quickly. They're resilient types of kids to have gone through, like, a period in you know, 100-year event, basically, which the shutdowns and COVID has been. So these boys will end up pretty resilient. They want to play the game. They would have found ways, as many of the boys have, of working on their deficiencies in that period anyway. We've seen Nick Dacos not miss a beat, have we, you know, that survived it all to come through and be the player he is already at Collingwood. So I think these boys, they'll dispel those theories that they're behind the others. They believe in themselves. They'll get out there and play some great footy, I think, in the next month or so. And then they have their state league finals later in the year. So, yeah, we're pretty upbeat that there's plenty to work with, to look at, and plenty to choose come the draft in November this year.
Kevin, I love watching the draft shows, and they often show past clips of you just nailing these predictions on how a player will turn out. Sometimes it's like you're fast-forward in time to see how their career does pan out and just given the most beautiful and accurate summary. Are there some predictions that you've made along the way that stand out that you look back with a bit of a smile that you nailed?
Maybe the other way. Maybe the other way. Sometimes you think, geez, I don't think I got that one right. But look, generally the clubs get it pretty right. The top 20, if you look at the last decade, they pretty well nail it. There's very few that don't play in the top 20. There might have been 20% 10 or 15 years ago that didn't really have an impact, but now it's rare. And that's the system that has been there for a while, about 25 years. It's just developed to make it far more accurate for the clubs and far more accurate for people like myself to watch the games. You do have some busts, but you can't predict exactly how they'll go under the intensity that that AFL is. And I mean, not just the game, it's the whole professionalism of it, the training that's required. You're living in a full-time environment. Some just can't quite cope, but it's a small percentage. Mostly the raw talent will shine through, and they want to be footballers, most of these kids, all their lives, and to get that chance, they throw themselves right into it and give it their best shot. And so it's always exciting to watch that from the edges and see the boys that become household names in the game. And that's a thrill for us to see them have those breakout games where you just say, gee, we thought he'd be good. Like Benny Hobbs, I see his name up on the board. The rising star of this week, his name's up from last year. Well, hasn't missed a beat since he's got into the Essendon side, and given the supporters there some real hope that that a star has emerged from their draft of last year.
Now, Kev, we have another father-son at the pointy end, Marcus Ashcroft, son, Will. Is he potential number one? And is it right that he hasn't declared Brisbane as his want-to-be home yet?
Well, it sounds a bit like the Mark Murphy or even Nick Dacos of last year, where they've got that option of going in the open draft or agreeing to a father-son deal. Gee, he's a good player, I can tell you that. He had 51 at the weekend. I don't know whether any kid, even Nick Dacos, did have
51
disposals playing in the NAB League against the other best kids from around Victoria. But look, he's been getting those sorts of possession numbers in all the footy he's played. He's had about three or four games at VFL level. Father-sons can get push up a bit earlier than some of the other boys. And so he's played at the Lions in the VFL and averaged about 24 in those games. But that wouldn't be on 100% game time either. So he looks a pretty special player. He can step straight in. He's a natural leader. He's got all the footy smarts that you expect. But his father's played 300 games, and Marcus has worked in the business for a long time. I don't think he'll miss a beat wherever he ends up, and most likely Brisbane, you'd think. But he's a fantastic player, fantastic young man to boot. So you'd think that he's capable of going straight in and having an impact wherever he ends up.
So Lions would be a bit nervous, Shifter. We've got to what, June? He hasn't declared love yet.
I think it's the line that concentrate on what's in front of you. You're probably Captain Vic Metro into the championships. There's a bit to be played out, so it's the old one step at a time.
Oh, I think. Okay.
And he'd want to, prove himself to be, if not the best, in the best couple of players around Australia for this year's draft, and put the score on the board, as they say, I reckon, and that'll be his mindset, I would think. And he has not missed a beat to date with everything he's done in the first half of the year.
Can you give our listeners a couple other names who will be in that top five areas that we'll know more about in a couple of months?
Well, there's a kid called George Wardlaw that, a benchmark game to date is when the national kids got together. They played as Australia. They played Collingwood's VFL side. So it's a bit of a, in the sand type game where you get a feel of the best from around the nation. This kid was best on the ground for the Australian side against Collingwood's VFL. He's a powerful brute. Just think body type of a Christian Petrarca. His work away from stoppage was spectacular. His speed away from there. Then at one stage took a mark in front of the pack where he just come across just floated across the front of a very big pack. And that was just a couple of glimpses. Sometimes you only need a few glimpses like that. But he did have a very strong game overall. So we love his power. He's about a six-footer. A boy from Oakley, St. Kevin's boy. Look out for him. Harry Sheezels, he's the kid that makes something out of nothing up around the goals. He's a freak around there. Got brilliant, reads the cues on where the ball's going to go. He's the first there, and off you just a blink of the eye and it's through, and he's done it again. He's kicked goals all year wherever he's played in all of these games at in the NAB League. He plays at Sandy with Ashcroft. They're a pleasure to watch those two boys get together. There's a kid called Lockie Cowan at the weekend for the Allies, a boy from North Launceston over there in Tassie that played terrific, backed up the form he's shown all year playing for the Tassie Devils that play now regularly in the NAB League. So he's a half-back that breaks a bit of Tom Stewart about him, the way he takes the game on. Exciting to watch him. And he continued that form with the Allies at the weekend. So there are a few of the boys, but there's going to be about 150 in front of us in the next 5 weeks. So we certainly look forward to seeing who emerges with the Ashcrofts to be the stars of tomorrow.
Now, Kevin, you might want to answer this one over a beer one day, but I'm going to ask it now. Who's the best junior footballer you've ever seen?
Well, as a junior, I tell you what, Wayne Carey's hard to beat. So Gary Lyon. It's about the first year I was in it, actually. Nick and Scotty, we're up in Canberra, and I remember Slug Jordan coaching the Victorians. So I just one side back then, and it was under 17s then. And day of the final game, we're looking out, having a cup of coffee, looking out the motel room window at the car park, and there's a couple of kids having kicked a kick, and Wayne Carey was one of them. He's standing on their shoulders in the car park before the game. Would you get out there and tell that silly idiot he's our best player and we can't afford to get him hurt? Now, this is the day of the game. So we give him the message. The boy goes back inside. Young Wayne goes out. We play in the mud. Oh, he stood on their shoulders. He's unbelievable. Bob Hawke presented the All-Australian jumpers at the end of the game. And, of course, there's the Duck in the front row getting his All-Australian jumper with Rob Harvey, by the way, who was in that particular group. I think Jose Ramiro, if you can go back. So it's a long way back.
Nice.
I'll never forget to Carey standing on heads in that particular game after having a kick in the car park a few hours earlier. Billy gave the coach Slug Jordan a heart attack.
Now we have to ask you about someone close to this program. Daniel Harford was one of the great junior footballers who never quite reached his potential, Kev.
Oh, look, he's terrific. Look, he had 150-odd games, a pretty fair return.
Oh, yeah,
but he's a mark medalist. He's down in the history, the annals of history, being the best and fairest player in the championships. Way back in the 90s, geez, you're stretching the memory now for half a smooth mover in the centre. Ball magnet had come to him, the Sharon, just about weather poisoning every week as a junior. And a great player for Northern Knights he was too.
He sounded like half talking about himself there. He won the Lark Medal in 1994. And what about our other friend of the show, Jack Watts? He got the job done in 2008. He was a silky smooth junior.
Well, he's not far off 200 games as well, Jack, and a little bit maligned. That's very unfair. If he was choice 10, you'd say, look, 180 games and lots of injuries, you've got a pretty fair player. He was a terrific player, Jack, and to boot, a fantastic individual. You know, sold the game very, very well in terms of marketing. We're in that business of talking about the game in a positive sense, and he always relates a great story about his experiences too, when he talks about footy. So Jack was a young gun that we talked into coming our way from basketball. We're glad we did. He's a great addition to footy, and we love watching his career.
Kevin, you have been absolutely outstanding this morning. Thank you so much for having a chat. We've learnt a lot and had a laugh along the way.
All the best, guys. Look forward to the next 5 weeks.
Kevin Sheen talking about the rising stars of the AFL.
Can we delete that? Because he's going to get that promo out, Daniel. You know that. That's going to get played a lot.
He might give you a few drive-bys. You're a bit disrespectful to the former.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just...
Hawthorn and Carlton champion.
Well, Dennis Pagan and I share a belief in how football should be rated.
Very, very unkind. But we can't take that Lark Medal away from our man, Half.